Hello and welcome to Home to Her, the podcast that's dedicated to reclaiming the lost and stolen wisdom of the sacred feminine. I'm your host, Liz Kelly, and on each episode, we explore her stories and myths, her spiritual principles, and most importantly, what this wisdom has to offer us right now. Thanks for being here. Let's get started. Hey, everybody, and thanks for joining me for today's show. So on my last episode, my guest, April McMurtry, and I took a deep dive into what I like to think of as moon magic. We talked about using the lunar cycle as an alternate way to experience time, and also how we might understand our own rhythms in connection to the moon. We covered a lot of ground, but I think when it comes to understanding the wisdom of the moon, there's a lot more ground that can actually be covered. So I'm really thrilled to have April back for a second episode so we can continue exploring all this moon magic together. Now, if you haven't listened to the last episode yet, you may want to pause here and go back to the first one just in case we reference that discussion here. And if you've listened to the last one already, here's a quick refresher on our guest. April McMurtry is the founder of The Moon Is My Calendar and the New Moon Calendar Journal, a simple yet groundbreaking tool for aligning with inner and outer cycles, tracking daily health and wellness, and bringing your intentions to life. As April states, the moon is a beautiful beacon in the sky, reminding us that everything is a phase. And I feel like that is such a good reminder for right now when times are so very intense. April is also a visual artist, a mother of two girls, a yoga teacher, an educator with extensive experience working with kids, and a creative lunar guide. April, thank you so much for coming back for round two.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. It's, you know, connecting with the moon in that way, there are so many layers and places to go. So I'm excited to explore more with you.
Oh, me too. Well, and one thing that I want to acknowledge for our listeners, so when we recorded the last episode, I don't know that either of us was aware of what had happened between Amy Cooper and Christian Cooper in Central Park, that whole incident, and then, of course, the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And we both were kind of texting with each other later that if we had known about these things at that time, we may have had a really different discussion. And so one of the things that, April, that you mentioned, you know, when we were texting about this, is that there was this way of addressing white supremacy and looking at that, or I guess specifically using your understanding of the moon as a tool for dismantling white supremacy, which I may or may not be saying that exactly right, but that kind of blew my mind. So I wanted to, like, let's start there. And maybe I just have you talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. This has been a time really of deep reflection, and also that call to action of seeing in many ways is like, how is my work, how is all of our work a part of an active dismantling process of white body supremacy in the United States as being one of those things that's just, you know, any incident that comes up and the ones that you mentioned, those are just part of this long string of, like, if they're seen as individual incidences, then it's like this one time thing. When it's seen as systemic, it's like, this is huge, and it's not going away on its own. And so what is the active participation? So that reflection on my part really is like, how is working with the moon and with lunar time part of an active dismantling of this system within our society and the foundation of this country as we come up to 4th of July is on the next lunar eclipse in Capricorn with, you know, so it's all feels, it both feels very symbolic and it feels very real of this real questioning, a real reckoning, a real, like, what does this stand for? Like, what's being celebrated and what's not? And why is that? And when those questions just lead you back to, well, okay, white body supremacy, of what's, you know, who controls the narrative and how that, how it does relate to time and how it does relate to cycles as well. So when I looked ahead, you know, thinking back last December, when I was planning ahead just for themes for different lunar cycles and getting a sense of what they would be, this next lunar cycle coming up, the words to me came that would came were radical restructuring.
Wow.
How would I have any idea what, like, the full impact of what those words would mean and be playing out, both on a very personal level and on a collective and on a global scale. So some of the, you know, some of the themes and just what I had mentioned to you earlier of, like, you know, the resources and the frameworks for understanding, like, what is white body supremacy? What are some of the characteristics of that culture that go unnamed because it is when it's seen as the norm. Mm-hmm. And it's not the norm and it doesn't have to be that way. So looking to the resources that the organizations showing up for social justice has on their website.
Or for racial justice, right? Surge.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, which is a great organization, by the way. I mean, I have just read and checked out some of their resources, but I think that there's a lot there, especially for white folks who are really trying to understand this at a deeper level. Yeah.
So there's one of the articles that they have on there, characteristics of white supremacy culture. And just looking through that and seeing where is there that connection and that overlap with working with the moon and connecting with lunar time, and really, you know, I could go backwards and forwards with history right now in that to connect with how time has been related to and understood, and the moon being a part culturally all over the world for all peoples and still continues to be for many, if not the majority, simultaneous with the Gregorian calendar, which we can talk about a little more. But I just wanted to point out three of these characteristics that are in this article that to kind of relate to and frame within working with the moon. And the first being perfectionism and this perfecting and, you know, then what's not perfect is somehow wrong, inferior, creates kind of that hierarchy. And so the striving for perfectionism has brought even time itself, the second, the atomic second of universal time, is so precise that actually the irregularities in the orbit of the Earth, this perfect time has to be recalculated at New Year's each year, a couple seconds, because it's like too perfect for Earth. And so how removed then has time become, the like dominant culture time become from the Earth when it's even more perfect? So it's just something to ponder, right? To think about and question, what is this striving for perfectionism? Like, where does it land us? Mm-hmm. Where is it driving us and pushing us?
Well, and it categorizes, right? Because if you have the perfect, then you have the imperfect. And who is defining what is perfect and what is imperfect? Mm-hmm. And then then you get into some really tricky territory. I'm actually reminded of one of my first teachers of the Divine Feminine would say to me, you can't separate the perfect from the perfect. And what she meant was, you know, in the experience of the sacred feminine that she was giving me, it is all a part of the mother and all of it is perfect. We wouldn't say all of it is good. She said, I never say I'm all good. Mm. We are well. We may not be good, but we're well. But it is all part of her. And because of that, it is all perfect. And so you can't separate the perfect from the perfect, which I thought was just such a beautiful, beautiful way to frame things.
Wow. Yeah. And what can be seen as irregular, and how the moon really became removed from the civil calendar, removed from the Gregorian calendar, it was because of its irregularities. And so that right there speaks like so many volumes within itself.
Yeah. Wow. So perfectionism is a hallmark of white supremacy. Okay. Yes. Can definitely see that.
The sense and the pressure of urgency. And so urgency often leading to decisions being made. Well, this idea of like that time is running out. So we just have, you know, that, that there's not enough time, that there's like even like the scarcity of time and scarcity putting people into a fear mode. And so not having a relationship that with time that has a sense of these are cycles that have been here from the beginning of time that will continue for who knows? Who knows the grand plan of how the that expansion and contraction over universe, like universe, big time, beyond lifetime time. So having this sense of understanding of cycles rather than we have to make a decision real quick, we've got to do it, often with not looking at seven generations, looking at when we look to people and cultures that hold time sacred in a way, there's an understanding of cycles. So also when we bring those cycles and working with the moon into our life to have a sense of I'll get another chance. I can do this again. Like I get not necessarily a do-over, but cyclical time then allows for a sense that everything moves in cycles and it's not linear. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, the other thing that comes up for me when I think of that too, the urgency, we're running out of time, is the mentality of scarcity. Like that idea that there is not enough for, which can be, you know, there's not enough time for me to do what I want to do, but that can also be expanded out to there's not enough to go around for everyone, period. Which then I think leads to the mental gymnastics of othering. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I have to get what I need. I'm going to take what I need because there's not enough for all of us. So I've got to go out and grab what's going to work for me. And in order for me to justify taking from you, then I can play the mental game of finding something wrong with you. You are not as good as me. You are not as perfect as me, if we want to weave that back in, you know, and then that's how I justify.
It feels like what a mess of, you know, all of the unraveling that really is necessary. And so the third one then is the either or thinking, which makes the good or bad, the us and them, the black and white categories of boxes of these are, it's one or the other. And so something very early on for me in working with the moon was this understanding of it's all phases are one. And the moon isn't just a full moon or a new moon. There's a wholeness. And yet to allow for that to be contained, not even contained, but for all expressions and dimensions, for one, not to contradict the other. And probably two, in your work with the divine feminine, that experiencing a whole range, that they're not at odds with each other. Like the new moon's not at odds. It brings such depth and real dimensionality. So through that lens, or through that lunar lens of really connecting and having a relationship, then getting to see individually, like each for ourselves, what is that range, what I like to call the orbits, what are those all of those orbits, and then being able to see that within others as well.
Yeah. You know what I'm wanting to, I feel really that I want to name this too, because all of these things that you've named that are these kind of hallmarks of white supremacy culture, this either or thinking and the perfectionism and the, you know, urgency running out of time. You historically, if you look back at the divine feminine and what she's associated with, the principle she's associated with, it is pretty much the exact opposite. You kind of just said this, instead of either or, it's yes and. Mm-hmm. How can we say yes? It is always yes. The answer is yes. There's truth in it for everybody. So that's one thing. Abundance as opposed to scarcity. There is enough to go around, and our job as humans is to keep the cycle going and to honor the abundance. And then, you know, the perfectionism, well, you can't separate the perfect from the perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I really need to name that there's misogyny that is present in white supremacy as well. And so that is why, in case it's not clear, why I want to be talking about this on this show. Like, our future and our liberation is intimately intertwined with the liberation of other people. And that is the divine feminine. She is not about like, oh, let's flip the hierarchy and put women at the top. Like, absolutely not. That's just patriarchy dressed up and, you know, something else. Mm-hmm. I think she is for the liberation of us all. And it is our job to do the work to dismantle these ways of thinking, because, you know, white supremacy is just completely embedded with patriarchy as well. And so when we start to pull this apart, it benefits everybody. And mm-hmm. so I just want to make that super clear.
Yeah. So we are just locating oneself and grounding and orienting to be able to do that in relationship with nature, in relationship that shows us and teaches us cycles. And two, when I think about it, like, to have a way to connect where there isn't some like intermediary authority in between you and that understanding, that wisdom, that deep knowing. And so that direct relationship for me is what has been found with connecting with the moon, mm-hmm. and why for anyone who is in there wanting to, or feels this call or feels this pull, it feels like, because that is somehow a part of this liberation, this kind of breaking free from structures that have just become a norm within a society that are so oppressive and racist and misogynistic and, I mean, and extractive, that has a deep underlying unsettledness that just for so long, and in my education, a lot of it just wasn't named until later, like until college, when you're able to look at things, especially from a historical point of view, and see things weren't always this way, and so they don't always have to be this way continuing into the future.
Yes, absolutely. That's such a good thing to name too, and one of my great passions in doing this work is, it's not because I think we're going to go back to some, like, we don't, like, time, I mean, to your point, everything is a cycle, and time is, you know, we are progressing onwards. So it's not like we are going backwards to something, but knowing where we came from mm-hmm. absolutely gives us some alternate ways to think about our future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when we go back, and you and I were talking earlier about like prehistoric timekeeping and, how sophisticated that was. And this is in places all over the globe where there are, what seem like maybe rudimentary markings of time. And yet you have to be in really deep relationship with cycles. You have to have a very acute observation and awareness to mark those and understand the ways that things come back around, and the moon being like the the moon and Venus. Venus is a timekeeper as well. To have a longer term relationship to see these inner workings of something. And then how that comes to develop into the Gregorian calendar, the international civil calendar that's used, and in some cases parallel or alongside of, I think, you know, from looking into, there's at least about 40 different calendars that are used today, and sometimes again alongside this this other one. So that the story of time and how that's developed, and now where we find ourselves and with our relationship with time. And I've seen how just even at the beginning of shelter in place and COVID earlier this year, how that became this disruptor of relationship to time, and yes, how people were handling that disruption.
Yes. Yes, such a good point. I'm thinking of the so many memes I saw in the beginning of people talking about how they were drinking to survive and, you know.
Yeah, I know. Funny, not funny.
When
you have, when time is so regimented, right? And so time being that thing that then when someone, and it gets into capitalism, it gets into a lot of things that are like, like this command over time, being a command over nature, being a command over bodies, being command, you know, this kind of like a domination over kind of something that's imposed. And so relating to the moon and relating to time then in a way where you begin to feel, and I know, you know, many people have this relationship and feel this, but for those of us who've been kind of cut from any lunar lineage or nature-based integral relationship, to see ourselves as a part of all of that, rather than something like, rather than something that's, you know, calendars were used, especially so Roman calendars, which is where the Gregorian calendar, you know, originates from, they were used like and manipulated for political purposes. Time, you know, and a lot of it too was like, well, having a civil calendar to be able to collect taxes. Like, what are the functions? Like, what are some of the functions for governments in there? It's not to have a relationship with nature. It's not to see oneself as a part of it. Whereas that's where the origins of for humans understanding time come from.
Wow, that is just, that is mind blowing. The idea of time as a political tool. Wow.
And it is, because then it does get into like, you know, how this calendar then was a tool that was a part of empire and colonialism. And, you know, in some language, like some of the books say, oh, it was adopted in certain countries at certain times. Well, where was that pressure to adopt the Gregorian calendar coming from?
Wow. I wonder too, if you could, I don't know if this feels like a good time for you, but right before we hopped on, we were just kind of chatting before we started, you know, recording the podcast, and you shared this amazing quote to the, from Lila June that I think is super powerful for this conversation too. I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing that with us.
So this quote, Lila June, and if you're not familiar with her work, she's an Indigenous environmental scientist. She's an educator, community organizer, musician, artist.
And she's also written really beautifully, I think, about, because she's part Native American and part European American ancestry. And she's written some really beautiful, she wrote an absolutely beautiful essay about trying to reclaim her European roots as well, that I'll put a link to it in the show notes, because I've read it multiple times and it's very powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. So the quote, a linear society thinks in terms of cradle to grave. So a linear society thinks in terms of cradle to grave will have an end point. So a linear society that thinks in terms of cradle to grave will have an end point. It won't be sustained. However, a culture that thinks cyclically and reinvests all waste, so-called waste in quotes, into its livelihood will continue like a circle. It will never end.
Which is exactly what we're talking about when we think about experiencing time from a lunar perspective in that cyclical way. Mm-hmm. I find that so powerful in its truth and alarming in its truth, but it's very clear. Yeah.
It's clear. And so how does that move us forward? And what is the relationship? You know, I've always had a very complex relationship with time myself, which is probably what drew me into, oh, this feels right. This feels natural. This feels connected. This feels like something that I can be a part of, a rhythm. And right when that rhythm is disrupted, that's where dis-ease comes in. So there's a lot that's connected here. And that just for some of that historical perspective, right? You know, we're coming up as we're recording this, we're coming up on the month of July. And July was named for the month that Julius Caesar was born. And when we think of, like, you know, the quotes or what if it's distilled down, this idea of I came, I saw, I conquered.
Yes, I took Latin in high school, so I had a vini, vidi, vici, or was that it? Yeah. Yeah.
So those who come and see and conquer get months named after them in this calendar.
Wow.
And I think as we're in a time, my husband just told me, he grew up in Berkeley, and there's been a renaming of schools. The first school my daughter went to, we lived across the street from Washington Elementary. They're just naming it and saying it, like, schools that are named after slaveholders, we're not going to honor them. We're going to go through the process of renaming or reclaiming. So with the calendar, then having that awareness of, like, what's sort of invisible or just accepted as July, and I think there was a point where all of the months were going to be named after different emperors. But instead, they're mostly named after numbers, right? Diciembre, dies being 10, octubre, 8, the 8th month, when the first month was March. So the numbers, it's funny because the numbers don't relate, right? October isn't the 8th month, it's the 10th month. And that's sort of this...
Yes. But I feel like I read something in my, that's ringing a bell for me too, yeah. Of like something about a way of erasing the previous way of understanding time. I could be wrong on that. Mm-hmm. That's coming to mind. That's something I read about that.
Yeah. So there's just a lot. It opens up a lot when you start to kind of question when there's a tool that's like a part of a power domination control. And so in, you know, just learning about other calendars and calendars that I didn't grow up with, but having an appreciation for ways of timekeeping that really reflect values. And, you know, Julius Caesar, like, that doesn't reflect my values. Like, that's not something that I want to be a part of. So yes, there's alternatives and things that are parallel, but just to have a sense of we're moving towards another way. And yeah, as we mentioned earlier, like, if COVID didn't already have that, like, wait, is time endless? Does it feel like there's more time when there isn't these, like, you know, relationships to time, just it shifts and changes. So what it's moving towards. And I had mentioned to you too, like a calendar, like the Baha'i calendar. But yeah, this was a faith that's, you know, in the 1800s. And I don't know that much about it. A friend of mine grew up, her mother was Baha'i and left Iran. But the calendar, so looking at it from culturally perspective, like calendars are often connected with culture, religion or spiritual practices or a marking of seasons. And the Baha'i calendar has 19 months. And maybe if someone who is listening and practices with this calendar can, you know, I'd love to talk to you more because it's so fascinating. The 19 months, each one of them is named after a virtue. And so that, again, when we want things to really deeply reflect our values and names, and with time and months being one of those. So,
wow. I mean, that's really a powerful thing to think about. You know, it's the things that I find that these things are so important to, the things that kind of run in the background that we don't pay a lot of attention to. Like, we don't think about the fact that July is named for Julius Caesar. Maybe most people don't even know that, right? Mm-hmm. Or all the ways in which our culture very subtly underscores the ideas of, dominator culture, colonialism, white supremacy, all of these things, that they're just interwoven. And it's amazing to think about. And so where my head is kind of spinning, because you referenced this earlier, is this idea of, okay, so there's a lunar eclipse on July 4th, then. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I want you to talk to me about that, because that just feels like, wow. I mean, what the possibilities. And mm-hmm. I want to say this before I forget, I participated in a ritual a couple of weeks ago, and I'm hopeful that the woman who led the ritual will be on the podcast soon. Her name is Letty Sullivan. She's wonderful. But she was talking about the idea. It was really about tapping into divine feminine energy to address, racial injustice and social injustice. But she was talking about the idea of, where are we unconsciously consenting to systems of oppression?
Mm.
And the idea of saying, I withdraw my consent. Mm. I do not consent, for example, to live in a society where time honors emperors or people who are conquerors. I withdraw my consent from that idea. And so this is what's kind of popping to my mind, is this beautiful opportunity on July 4th at the birth of our nation. There's a lunar eclipse,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, I withdraw my consent from these systems of oppression. I will not participate in them anymore.
I have goosebumps, like all.
I do too.
Yeah. And eclipses are about alignment and shadows. Eclipses happen because of points on the moon's orbit that are like hot spots. And when the moon crosses over one of those at a full moon or a new moon, it creates the condition for the alignment of an eclipse, where either the Earth's shadow or the moon's shadow is crossing over. So these hot spots are called the nodes. So if you've heard of the lunar nodes, and this, the full moon on July 4th, the moon will be crossing over the south node. And so the south node is a lot of that. What is our relationship to the past? And it's in Cancer, even though the nodes have shifted. So the nodes shift. And so this is this understanding that there's this progression. There's this progression through the nodes. So we're just closing out the eclipses of Cancer and Capricorn that are 18, 19 month periods of time. So a bigger cycle of time to work these themes of Cancer corn. I really like that.
I love it.
Of Capricorn and Cancer. Of working those. And so we have this final one on July 4th. And Capricorn represents the authority. It represents, you know, it doesn't have to be in, it's like, well, what is the potential for authority? How do each of us have our own inner authority Where has authority been like either outsourced or just taken into and formed into structures of power and domination and control? And so the South Node is like, where have you been? What needs to be restructured, reworked about who's the boss?
Wow.
So it feels really big. And so I think then you live through it and in it and a part of it and see like what form that takes. But the theme is there within the astrology. Within the Western astrology, right? Because there are also many systems of astrology, and that idea of like one's right or one's wrong. I don't know if I mentioned this on podcast before, because I'd gone through that of like, okay, well, there's Vedic astrology, and so if they have different systems, then which one is right? Like I've had that question, like, well, I want to do the one that's the right one, and then if you look at, well, there's lots of different languages. So if you speak Japanese or if you speak Russian, like, is there a language that's right? There are different ways of relating and bringing a form, a word, a symbol to give meaning to something.
Yeah, I'm picturing, as you're saying, that water and like all the different forms of water and the different bodies of water and all the ways in which water can appear, and yet it all eventually flows back to a single source, which is that divine truth and wisdom. And so we don't have to have one path. Like, we're all going to get where we need to go. We just flow with what resonates with our soul the most in this lifetime. Yeah.
Yeah. And that truth seeking, like that's the shifting of the nodes as we're going into then Capricorn, the South Node then becomes the Sagittarius South Node. So we'll go into then, which we just had a partial Sagittarius eclipse. So we'll go into that season of Sagittarius and Gemini, those themes. But we're closing out. So we're closing out and coming up to the solar eclipse on June 20th. Which is in Cancer. And the eclipse seasons, so they happen 6 months apart. And so it's a regular, they don't come out of nowhere. There is a rhythm to them. And that's a part of this time relationship, is there's a rhythm to the moon crossing over these hot spots, these nodes, the head and the tail of the dragon, that then brings up and a heightened awareness of the themes for that new moon or full moon. So yeah, the solar eclipse. And it's also on the solstice. So we have the this year, 2020.
Yeah, there's a lot happening.
Yeah. And even right, 2020, that's one calendar system of counting.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I also think, not to just throw too many things in there, and you seems like you know so much more about astrology than I do. I know very little, but I do remember a teacher telling me that 2020 was a very powerful year for the United States in general, because it is the, I believe it's a Pluto return.
I think
it's a Pluto return, which hasn't happened since the Revolutionary War.
There's, I was just reading this yesterday, because I'm a student of astrology. I feel like there's things and themes that are happening in the cosmos that we're living out, and in ways where it's not that it's undeniable. It's just like, how are these things so similar? So there are a number of things. And since some of those cycles of time that are longer and large ongoing cycles, like Pluto returns and then great conjunction of Jupiter and the planet Jupiter, which is Zeus and the king, and Saturn, which is going to happen on the winter solstice. So in 6 months we'll have this conjunction that with Saturn is like also a timekeeper, but it's like time's up, And so this theme of like time's up for the king, that's going to, another one that's going to be coming in December. So there's all these, there's so many, like there's too many probably to even all go into, but there are all these pointers of like, the changes are going to keep coming in big waves, and some people can build dams and try to stop those changes from happening and go back to business as usual, which is not really an option. Or to know, okay, here are some tumultuous waters that we've got to figure out how to ride through, to paddle through, to navigate, to find the new openings. And, you know, just in that way, like a flood coming, or just like all the waves of the ocean, if they're going to keep coming. So, yeah.
Yeah. And just to bring that back to this, you know, beautiful wisdom that you hold about the moon, I think, gosh, what a great teacher the moon can be for us during this time too. Again, that idea that everything is a phase, we move through these phases, and that time goes on, time continues in this never ending circular way. And I think that is, it's true on a small scale, and it's true on a really large scale. And I think it's true for us on a large scale in terms of lifetimes too. You know, it goes on and it goes on, which I think during tumultuous times for me can be incredibly comforting.
Yeah. That we're participating in a part of something, and a part of a process of evolution, and a process of change in that historical perspective that we've mentioned in different ways, of like, things haven't always been this way. And so that change is possible, and it's happening, and looking for the ways within ourselves of what are those structures or those beliefs, that when we see them, when there's a light shown on them, to be able to start to question or start to dismantle or start to have conversations about, to open up for new possibilities. And for me, it's like new possibilities too, of being in relationship with nature, with the earth, with all beings. Yeah, that's informed both by understandings and wisdom that comes through connecting with the moon, but an understanding that goes beyond and seeing like the, yeah, like I lost my way. I lost my thought and my way just in, part of it is what is the future that we're calling forth? What is the future that we're living into and finding new, some of its language, some of its understanding, some of its wisdom, some of its like connecting, some of its stepping back and being quiet and silent and listening.
What a time to be alive, huh?
Yeah, it's, to me, it feels, it's exciting for what's possible, because things need to change. And yeah, especially being in the United States and being living on unceded land. I mean, just as a starting point of like, to come and take ownership of something that's not been owned anyway, and then not to acknowledge or even recognize.
And then to just literally write that out of your history books and pretend like it did not exist is...
It's sickening, and it makes for sickness and illness. And so, yeah, I love what you were saying and sharing of like, what are the things I'm withdrawing my consent to, like, and so then what is the creating, the creative process that then comes from that, that gets to come of like, what gets created that is a culture that's founded on equality, that's founded on justice, that's founded on love.
So I want to ask you, only if we're talking about all of these things with the stars and the, you know, in this current moment in time. And so I feel like it would be remiss to not ask you about this period that we're coming out of right now, the Venus retrograde, period. I know that I think you were doing a class around understanding Venus, and you mentioned Venus as a timekeeper in her own way. So I wonder if you could speak just a little bit to that and how you see that energy fitting into everything else.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there's the astrology. And like I said, since there are many systems, it's like what I often go to is the movement of the moon, the movement of the planets, and that relationship. It's the relationship that creates the phases of the moon. And there's a relationship that creates Venus goes through phases as well. And so for anyone who's has a deep relationship with the moon, it's not that far to go to begin to understand the phases of Venus, which were also, you know, very complex calculations that there's some tablets of in cuneiform tablets from Sumeria, the Middle East, of tracking Venus's cycles, and the Mayan calendar being based on Venus cycles as well, and the structures that are still standing in southern Mexico that mark the certain risings of Venus, so that it could be seen when Venus was a morning star and when Venus was an evening star. And so we're still in this retrograde period of Venus that will come out of June 25th, of Venus going direct. And that retrograde period marks a time of Venus moving from an evening star, going, meeting up with the sun, just like a new moon. The moon meets up with the sun. So Venus does that as well and goes through a Venus new moon phase, and then comes out the other side as a morning star. So just this week, Venus is rising as a morning star. And there's that switch. There's a pendulum that swings from morning star to evening star. And Venus, both in the Americas, or what has been come to call the Americas, in practices throughout Mesoamerica, and also understood in the West, that Venus as a morning star had more of a warrior kind of energy, more of like a fighting to protect and defend that which you love. And so, yes, Venus, Aphrodite, like all of the sort of mythology around this goddess who has other names, right? Who has many other names. And that's part of what we've been exploring in this course was, you know, what are the many, many names and qualities of Venus? But there was definitely, you know, this dual nature of evening star, which was more of the yin expression of Venus, the more receptive, the more lunar expression, and the morning star, the more active, the more solar, the more young, the more go out to defend and protect. So we're moving into that kind of energy of Venus as a morning star, and Venus being connected with that which is valued and how it's valued and who is valued, making room for pleasure, you know, that pleasure is also of value, things that can't be, you know, commodified, and bringing in some of that, the warrior qualities of Venus. So yeah, it's been quite a journey, and Venus goes through cycles as well. So Venus is a morning star for 9 months and then disappears into the underworld. And there's stories and parallels with her story with Inanna. And then emerges as the evening star. And that's the waning Venus, the morning star is the waxing, which is why there's the parallel, I think, of that more young, solar, active, activated quality and expression.
Mm-hmm. So rich, like just fascinating. I don't know. If this were a meal, I feel like I could just chew on this conversation. Like, yeah. Just, it would be like a multi-course meal that I could just, you know, savor mm-hmm. and all of this, you know, very, very nourishing too. A good meal. It's a good, healthy meal.
Yeah. And it's, there's so many layers and depths and things to bring to the surface, and something that's real and tangible to connect with in nature. It's not abstract. It's not like, it's not abstract. It's, you know, it's very real and tangible and earthy in that way, that the cycles that connect us back to our relationship and our presence on Earth, and Venus and the Moon have marked that time for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. I mean, can time even be marked? Can that even be that relationship that has been there? So that's part of, you know, just with creating a circular calendar, you know. And if for anyone who's listening, if you don't have a calendar that you can see visually time in a circle, get one or make one or draw one, you know, make your own. Like, it's a relationship, so you can make your own. This version of the New Moon Calendar journals my interpretation of how to visualize that. But when our eyes move in circles in this way, there's something else that's happening in our brain, in our integrating within our own brain. So yeah, this has been quite a journey through this conversation. And it's just the beginning. You know, it's, in some ways, it's not just the beginning. It's just, it's a continuation that's going to continue and open up new dimensions. And I feel like it's also something that can connect us back to questioning and wondering, you know, how was it that my ancestors connected with the moon? At what point did they stop, and what kind of force was used to make them stop? That tracing back that can happen with that, and the moon connecting us with the matrilineal lineage.
Yeah, I feel like you've just named, you know, I was gonna, it's kind of a closing question here, just I was gonna ask you, you know, how, you know, working with lunar energy can really help us navigate these times. So I kind of feel like this whole conversation has done that. And I do so strongly agree with the idea of starting to look at time as a circle. I know I've been working with your calendar only for, this is the second moon cycle. It's an adjustment for me. Like, mm-hmm. It's definitely an adjustment, but it's a really valuable one. I think it's worth your time to try and think about orienting yourself in that way. And I just want to put in a reminder too of, like, you know, as we continue to go through these really crazy, intense times, to get outside if you can and just get your feet on the earth. And I know for me, when I'm really feeling overwhelmed, bare feet is best, or I just lay down. I just lay down in the dirt, you know, whatever. Clothes can be washed, but just allowing ourselves to remember that we are part of this system that's so much bigger than us, and we're part of these cycles, and that they are, I really believe in my heart, are ultimately benevolent and nurturing, like, here to support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This feels like a good place to wrap up to me. How about to you? Is there anything that you wanted to add to finish? Or
no, I think there's something you just said that spark, that kind of, like, how does it come together? And I think that's how we navigate that personally, as a personal relationship, and how we navigate that collectively in, you know, maybe next year, July will not be called July.
I'm going to withdraw my consent. I'm going to come up with a different word for sure. I'm sure we could come up with something else.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Well, thank you. Yeah. The places, and just looking and seeing the places where time comes up and shows up, and how time itself is a relationship, and it gives us the ability to connect with each other, connect with you know, on those deeper levels, like you said, with the earth. When all the to-dos, you know, when so many of the to-dos are put on hold and we're asked to do what's essential, like, and to keep, you know, even through this summer, of keep doing what is essential. Where does the time get prioritized? When what's seen of value, you know, and that's very much the Venus questions that come up, is what's seen of value to do. That doing is that very solar thing. Mm-hmm. I think the last thing that I was going to mention was that a lot of the work that I like to do with the moon and breathing with the moon and making the breath visible and bringing in creative practice with that, a lot of it also involves working with this integration of the right and left sides of the body, the right and left hemispheres of the brain. You know, and if you are right hand dominant, which is a more left brain way of being, even though I know there is the wholeness and the integration that's all there, to do more practices with the left side, the lunar side, you know, even just very simple, like brushing your teeth with the non-dominant hand, but for me with the left hand, with drawing and making circles. And so that's a part, probably I'm just going to see each month, I may run the Know Your Moon course. And part of it is a creative practice of breathing and making marks and working with this integrating of what's not familiar. What's the non-dominant side, right? With handwriting, what's not familiar, and practicing that so we can create the new neural pathways even within our brain for what's not familiar, what's not yet known, what's unknown, to not be afraid to move into the unknown, to not fear that change, to not put like the brakes up or the walls up or the dams up, to keep things how they are, but to work. And that's just one, you know, simple way just within our own body and how we maybe give preferential treatment to one side being more practiced or more developed or stronger, that it's a muscle to practice, like the art of not knowing.
Mm-hmm. Which, we all could use a lot of practice in that right now, for sure. Yeah. Well, in your, okay, so your website is themoonismycalendar.com, correct?
Yeah.
So if you want to learn more about, you know, courses that April's doing, she's got the New Moon Calendar Journal, the digital edition, which you can print out, which I have for 2020. That's available there too. And this has been so wonderful. I'm just so happy. You know, I wish we could do these in person. That would be the only thing that would make this better. But April, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for coming back. And thank you guys for listening. And as always, if you liked this podcast, then please do me a favor, give it a 5-star review, tell your friends about it, subscribe to it. You can do all those things. And I will talk to you again very soon.
Home to Her is hosted by me, Liz Kelly. You can visit me online at hometoher.com, where you can find show notes and other episodes. You can read articles about the Sacred Feminine, and you'll also find a link to join the Home to Her Facebook group for lots more discussion and exploration of her. You can also follow me on Instagram at Home to Her to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you back here soon.